Jody, how does this co-chair mic sound?
Great.
Wonderful. And then I'll just go to the other co-chair mic and the vice chair mic. And were there any other mics in particular that you wanted me to hit?
No.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks.
Co-chair mic number two. Vice chair mic. How do those sound for you?
Fine.
Awesome. All right. So I'm going to check the handheld just to be safe. Might as well. I'm going to run over there. Microphone test. How does this sound?
It's fine, thanks.
All right, wonderful. So I think that's it.
Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it as 1:01 p.m. on Thursday, April 7th, 2022. Present today are Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, myself, Co-Chair Merrick, Representative Josephson. And today we will hear an introduction of we waited a long time to hear this, House Bill 414. It's an appropriations bill put forward by the administration to access federal money coming to the state from the Infrastructure Investments and Jobs Act, or IIJA. Welcome to Director of OMB, Neil Steiniger, for being here today. Thanks for coming. And Coordinator, IIJA Coordinator Miles Baker is also here. So thank you guys for being here today. If you would place yourselves on the record and begin your presentation.
Yes, good afternoon. For the record, Neil Steiniger, Director, Office of Management and Budget.
And Miles Baker, Infrastructure Investment Coordinator in the Governor's Office.
And thank you for inviting us here today to discuss the Infrastructure Appropriation Bill, HB 414. I'll give a real high-level overview of how the Infrastructure Appropriation Bill impacts the state budget, and Mr. Baker will be going through some detail on what actually is in the Infrastructure Appropriation Bill. So at a high level, HB 414 impacts both fiscal year 22 and fiscal year 23 operating and capital budgets. In total, between the 2 years, there's approximately $1.003 billion in HB 414. Primarily, that comes from federal funds, and there is some required match, as well as some unrestricted general funds that are associated with other opportunities not necessarily directly required by the federal infrastructure bill. In fiscal year 22, you can see $352 million total, $38.5 million of that being unrestricted general funds, $310 million being federal funds. In fiscal year 23, the total is $652 million, of which $41 million is unrestricted general funds. The other funds here reflected on this table are a combination of what are called capital improvement program interagency receipts, which is how we reflect spending on capital projects that is being spent in our state operating budgets. And the other portion that you see on the capital rows here primarily is clean water, drinking water funds for those programs within the Department of Environmental Conservation.
Thank you, and let the record reflect at 1:03 p.m. we are joined by Representative Edgeman. And at 1:04 p.m., joined by Representative Laban. Thank you. Please continue.
And so to help see how this fits into the overall picture of the state budget, we've prepared an updated fiscal summary based on the infrastructure bill and all amendments put forward by the administration through early this week. And so with all of those amendments and the spring revenue sources or revenue forecast, we're projecting total revenue, unrestricted general fund revenue in fiscal year 23 of just over $7 billion, and total unrestricted general fund expenditures, inclusive of the amounts in this infrastructure bill, of a little over $4.8 billion, leaving about $2.2 billion of surplus revenue, which would then be deposited into state savings. Fiscal year 22 similarly has anticipated revenue of approximately $6 billion with a final budget of just shy of $4.8 billion and a surplus of $1.3 billion. The primary increases that have happened over the course of budget amendments, aside from this infrastructure bill, really is a reflection of the statutory payment of oil and gas tax credits. Our original budget had an estimated to be line there, and you can see a significant increase in statewide operations here reflecting the statutory calculation for those. Otherwise, budget amendments have been fairly small in dollar value outside of match required in this infrastructure bill.
Thank you. Please continue.
Good afternoon. So I know that we had, I believe, one presentation sort of generally on the infrastructure, the federal bill earlier in the House Finance Committee, but it's been a little while. So just to frame it up again, before we talk about the state's bill. We have, so this passed in mid-November. We've been working on this, and as you we communicated in December with the governor's rollout, we left out, with the exception of the Marine Highway, the new Marine Highway Rural Ferry Program, we left out all other stuff in the infrastructure bill. So we've spent the last several months going through it. It's important, I think, to remember that the bill was not all new spending. It reauthorized surface transportation, EPA programs, so that's money we would have expected to receive anyway. Also, that much of the opportunity in this bill, the federal bill, is not going to come to the state. So local governments are eligible tribes, and so the bill we're here to talk to you about today is what we know, our best estimate at this point of what will come through the state government, either this year or next year. And I think on the heels of the stimulus bills, which this committee is very familiar with, we don't really have discretion in how to spend this money. It's coming in very specific targeted federal programs that have guidelines, you know, competitive grants, eligibility requirements. And so we're not getting big tranches of federal money that we can then develop our own programs around or put towards our traditional capital budget. And then also important that about 60, and again, these are broad sort of on the bill as a whole, at the federal bill, 60% of it's gonna come through formula or allocation and the rest in competitive grants.
And thank you. Let the record reflect, at 1:06 p.m. we were joined by Representative Thompson, and at 1:07 p.m. by Representative Johnson. Question from Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Baker, on the portion that's not going to go to the state, but you mentioned the municipalities and the tribes, does it look like those types of funds that go to those municipalities and the tribes, are they competitive in nature, or are they just going to does it look like they're going to go to communities based on their population? How does it look from your standpoint as to how those funds are going to get allotted through, quote, the communities and tribes?
Mm-hmm. Representative Ortiz, through the chair, I think most of it is competitive. There are some, I mean, for example, the Secure Rural Schools program was reauthorized. That gets paid out to boroughs. The cybersecurity money we're directed to spend 80% of that on local government. So even though that'll come through the state, you know, it specifically specifies that 80% has to go to local and tribal. There are some population-based programs. It's kind of a hodgepodge, but I think the majority of the money that will be competitive.
Follow up?
And can you give me just a quick summary of the types of things that communities will be competing for, like the types of programs or the types of monies that they would be competing for? Would it be like, if you can just give me an example of the kinds of things they'd be competing for.
Sure. I mean, in, you know, transportation, for example, which is half of this bill, the traditional grant programs, the RISE grant, the infra grant, the the MARAD port program, can't remember the acronym at this moment. There is a lot of money for clean school buses, for example, that will be done by local government and school districts, in that there are energy and power projects. There's energy efficiency conservation block grants. The utilities will go after some of the money that's available in the energy sector. You know, the water programs that, you know, that DEC is involved in, but communities apply for those grants every year for safe and clean drinking water, water and sewer. Those are some of the.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, please continue.
Okay. And we kind of just talked with Representative Ortiz on this slide. I guess I would just, you know, the big blue is the total spending of the bill. That's, and it's the light blue that really is the focus of the new spending, because the expectation is that the larger amount would have been spent, the 423 in base spending would have happened regardless. And then of the new spending, it's you know, in terms of general categories split, about 50% in transportation projects, and the other is on energy and power, broadband, water, resiliency, environmental remediation, public lands, that sort of thing. So in developing the bill before you, we sort of had some guiding principles, as I mentioned, including just what's identifiable to the best of our knowledge right now in either current year or the budget year you're currently involved in. This is a 5-year, so federal fiscal 22 through federal fiscal 26 is what's generally appropriated in the federal bill. And so for DOT, for example, they're working on federal fiscal 23. So this bill includes the supplemental for 22 as well as a plus up for 23. We also, it's been very clear as we've gone through this that there's a ongoing need for coordination and implementation, working with local governments, working with tribes, and even at the state level, frankly, to continue to work. It's going to be a multi-year effort to deploy this funding. And then continuing to keep pressure on our UGF spend, we want to provide the, as I mentioned, the tribal and government support, and then making sure that everything that's before you in this bill, there's some tight nexus to what the federal priorities are. And then in a few instances, which we can address, wanting to make sure that we have some funds in here to pursue the largest sort of competitive opportunities, and those are mostly in the area of energy and critical minerals through the Department of Energy. So by category, as Director Steininger mentioned, this is a combination of supplemental and current year capital and operating. And we broke this out for purposes of presentation into these categories. I think you can think about them as in decreasing the earmarks, perhaps should be could be the number two there, but in decreasing order of, I guess, flexibility and discretion. So the first category is really the traditional federal programs, most of which you're familiar with. There are a few new ones we can talk about that have been established, like the Rural Ferry Program, the Bridge Program, the EV Program. There's a couple Federal Highway Administration programs. And then what the match is. So it's $56 million of UGF match, which is about 70% of the UGF that's in the appropriation bill to match $838 million of federal. The next category is a small amount of UGF that the governor feels is appropriate to I guess, provide a little bit more state spend on some of those federal programs. Critical minerals mapping is an example, cybersecurity protections. And so that's another $8 million. And then Congress finished a couple weeks ago, they finished the FY22 budget cycle. Earmarks, or congressionally designated spending, as it's now referred to, are back. And there were a number for Alaska, and a couple of the agencies need receipt authority for those. And then the coordination effort I talked about is $8 million, and then the competitive opportunities. 5.5.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that 109. We were joined by Representatives Carpenter and Wohl. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Quick question. The numbers here, you talked earlier about fiscal year 22 and fiscal year 20, so it's supplemental for fiscal year 22 and fiscal year 23. What are these numbers in reference to, the supplemental or the fiscal 23 or a combination?
Representative Carpenter, through the chair, these are a combination of both. So if we go back to this slide, you'll see the totals are the same that we're presenting on the other slide. This breaks it out into the traditional, you know, way the Finance Committee appropriates and looks at bills. And this was an effort to just talk about this in terms of sort of more of a policy discussion of how the money is spent.
Great, thank you. Please continue.
Okay. And so what I'd like to do now is just walk through, and we've got, you know, a number of our experts online if we need to, Madam Chairman. But so the first category, which are the federal programs and match that you'll see in the bill for commerce, the biggest one and probably the largest sort of category of new investment that's in the federal bill is in the area of broadband. And I know we've had already a number of discussions about that. So there is money to stand up a broadband office in the Department of Commerce. There is a lot of investment in public water and sewer projects. And I think, as we all know, that Commerce runs the Rural Utility Business Advisor Program, so there's money to support that program. Another new area, the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the Department of Interior, has stood up three new programs for orphan well plugging and remediation. There's one for state and private lands. There's a separate one for federal lands and a separate one for tribal lands. The first one that's been rolled out is the one for state and private land. And so AOGCC is the lead on that. There are 12 wells that have been identified on state land, and this is the amount of money we expect initially to start that program. We may see more, perhaps up to $50 million over the course of the program, but for the first initial establishment grant and first year. That money will be paid out in contracts. RSAs, the DNR, DEC, AOGCC won't be, you know, standing up and running the program themselves. They're just the lead. AEA, alternative energy and energy efficiencies, we've got a little less than $4 million in here to cover what we expect to receive in these programs that are identified here. You'll see that two of those at the bottom are new programs. And to Representative Ortiz's question, you know, that Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund Capitalization Program is one where local governments, communities may come in and apply. AHFC, there's a pretty significant increase to weatherization assistance program. The day after we finalized, there was an early estimate of $35 million the day after we finalized the bill. That's been revised by Department of Energy down, so we may see, I think it's more around 18 and a half, so that's one we may want to talk to the committee about in an amendment. And then sort of an energy efficiency, that's the AHFC's catch-all for a number of other programs that they apply for and run in the area of energy efficiency.
Great, thank you. It looks like we have about 15 folks from the different departments online to help answer questions. And with that, we'll go to Representative Edgman.
Yeah, just a quick question. Miles, can you give sort of a better sense of when this money actually arrives? Is this per the federal fiscal year that starts, or would this, you know, this of course would flow through the budget cycle that's before us now? But when does Alaska actually get this, assuming that this is all approved?
Representative Edgman, through the chair, now that the FY22 appropriation cycle is complete at the federal level, for these types of programs, I would expect the 22 money to come in soon, and the 23 money would be available starting after October 1st at the federal level.
Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I think that responds to my question. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Anything further? Please continue.
There are a couple of these programs where the guidance and the estimate and the allocation has been sort of announced, but all of the final details haven't been put in place. So it's possible that on October 1st, the start of the federal fiscal year, some of these programs, we won't get that money initially, but it's expected in the course of the federal fiscal year. that first federal fiscal year.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The AHFC data from the previous page, $35 million and $4 million, $2 million. Weatherization assistance, is that a grant program or is that a revolving loan?
The weatherization assistance program is a, that's a formula program at the federal level. It's sort of one of those formula allocation, kind of a combination of both. So I don't recall what it's based on a, I don't know how the formula is based, but it is a, it's a formula program.
And it looks like we do have someone from Alaska Sure. Housing online. James Wield, I think I'm pronouncing that incorrect, but is someone from Alaska Housing online?
Yes, through the chair, this is James Wield, Alaska Housing.
Great, thank you. Did you hear Representative Wohl's question?
The weatherization program.
Sir, if you could please place yourself on the record officially, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. James Wield, Budget Director, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. So these particular funds, they are appropriated to the state by formula. However, they are administered in grant form through a variety of agencies that we have throughout the state. So essentially, the funds would be administered in the same way that we administer our other weatherization funds.
Representative Wohl.
Yeah, thank you. Just so in a nutshell, so if an individual wants to improve the weatherization of their, or more fully weatherize their house, they would apply for a grant from whoever the grantee is, correct? And maybe not even AHFC.
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, that would be correct.
Great, thank you very much. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Is now the time to ask questions about the bullets on the next page, fish and game, health and social services, or there's going to be more presentation before we those bullets?
We're ready for slide 9 if you are.
Yes, please continue to slide 9. And Representative Ortiz.
So, thank you. So, is the Fish and Game Commissioner online?
I believe we have Rachel Hankey with Department of Fish and Game.
Okay.
I believe that is all. Representative Ortiz.
Ms. Hankey. On the first bullet here, this particular slide 9 we're looking at, it says wildlife restoration, going to fish and game, wildlife restoration, $24 million. Kind of a general term, wildlife restoration. What kinds of ways would that $24 million be used in relationship to, I guess, wildlife restoration?
Thank you, Ms. Hankey. Please place yourself on the record.
For the record, Rachel Hankey, legislative liaison for the Department of Fish and Game. This project is to increase the use of PR funds, which we expect to be dramatically increasing in the future, and we need it in addition to the existing operating for the Division of Wildlife.
Representative Ortiz.
Madam Chair, I couldn't hear her.
Ms. Hankey, could you please repeat that?
Sure.
Thank you. That's
and
much
for
better.
The record, Rachel Hankey. So this appropriation is necessary to help the Division of Wildlife capture expected increasing Pittman-Robertson funds, and would be used in the same manner that existing PR funds are used.
Representative Ortiz.
So just for a little bit more clarification, so. Based on your answer, you're telling me that the $24 million is going to be used to better utilize even more money that's going to be coming in from Pittman-Roberts funds? No. Go ahead.
We'll go to Mr. Baker. Please.
Sure. Representative Ortiz, through the chair. So under wildlife restoration, there's sort of two. There's the sport fish. You've heard of we've got the sport fish program and the wildlife restoration program. Both of those were reauthorized in the federal legislation, but the sport fish access piece was really didn't see it an increase, so we're not increasing it in this budget. But the Pittman-Robertson program, which is based on gun and ammunition sales have gone, the revenue of that has gone up substantially. So that's what you see here is a substantial increase in the federal allocation for wildlife restoration, and that's targeted wildlife management, research, equipment. There's a number of qualified, I think if you look in the capital backup. So this is really a supplemental to what their normal line item that goes in the capital budget every year. And there's a number of projects, things like, you know, it's a pretty broad, you know, aircraft hangar, you know, for example, is equipment that can be, you know, used to manage wildlife, wildlife management and research, habitat enhancement. There's a number of things, shooting range, photo census. I mean, there's a variety of things that can be done with that funding.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, same subject, Mr. Baker. So this isn't necessarily related to IIJA. This is something that was added into House Bill 414.
No, this is still all under the category of federal programs that were increased, changed, appropriated in the IIJA.
Thank you. Please continue.
Health and social services didn't, the only thing in the federal bill in that area is in the LIHEAP program, a very small supplemental in the LIHEAP. In the DMVA, we'll be managing through Homeland Security, their existing relationship with Homeland Security, a new state and local cybersecurity grant program. And that's one that the DOA will be involved in with our chief information officer and DMVA to work on a state plan and set up this grant program. This is our estimate of first-year allocation and establishment for that program. So more to come there, but that's the one, Representative Ortiz, I mentioned 80% of that funding has to actually go out to local and tribal governments. DNR has a number of sort of in two areas. There is a substantial emphasis in the federal bill on critical minerals and rare earth elements and securing a better domestic supply chain of those. And so the first two of these are in that area. This is an existing program that we're in, the data preservation program. It will see an increase that requires a one-to-one match. The department already has funding they can use, receipts from our materials center. I can't remember what that materials center. And then the Earth Mapping Resources Initiative, Earth MRI, we will get money there. And then the Bureau of Reclamation received funding for two programs, the second of which is on hard rock mines. It still has not come out. This is the existing program on, it's focused really on coal mines. We are expecting to get, this is a 15-year reauthorization, and we expect to get this increase over the next 15 years. But this is the first year. And then the U.S. Forest Service has a lot of money, both through DOI and Department of Agriculture for wildfire mitigation money. And so there's a new community wildfire defense program that will be administered by Division of Forestry. And we're expecting $3 million in that program.
Great. Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So the cybersecurity grants, is that a infrastructure focus, training focus, or personnel focus? What's the all of the above? Hardware, software?
I think it's both, all of the above. There were two. Homeland Security is the program that this sits in, the state and local cybersecurity grant program. And There is also Department of Energy got money for security, cybersecurity of electrical utilities and transmission. That program hasn't come, the guidance hasn't come out on that program. But equipment, software, training, the combination.
Maybe one more follow-up on that line of questioning. I'm just curious if we're looking at federal dollars that are going to bring in cybersecurity experts for a time period, and then the state would then be on the hook to continue funding for those individuals if we so choose after the federal funds run out. I'm just curious if that's
Madam.
I think we have Bob Ernesty from Military and Veterans Affairs online. Mr. Ernesty,
yeah,
are you here? Ernesty?
For the record.
Thank you.
For the record, Bob Ernesty, Admin Services Director for the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. So the grant program would be to help state, local, and tribal governments improving cybersecurity and addressing cybersecurity threats and risks to their IT system. I hate to speculate, and I can get you a firm answer. I don't think we would be on the hook long term for any kind of people that we would bring in to help with the initial uplift of improving those programs throughout the state, but I can follow up with our Director of Homeland Security and get you a firm answer.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I guess I wasn't specifically targeting Military and Veterans Affairs. It just jumped out at me that cybersecurity is heavily involved in people who know what they're doing. I mean, it's a technical field, and so there's probably people having to come in to do that. But any of these areas where there's federal money flowing in, are they associated with increased positions within the state that are getting funded through this that then have a longer-term impact on our personnel costs going forward? That's what I will hope to understand.
Mr. Baker?
Representative Carpenter, I would add that this was one of the programs in the bill that was only, it was a new program, and it was authorized for 4 years versus five. And so it's $1 billion over the 4 years. And it also was slightly different because the match requirement for those dollars does change over the 4 years. So it's initially at 10%, and then it increases 10% a year. So this is one where we would expect the GF match in the subsequent years potentially to go up slightly.
Mr. Steiniger?
Yes, for the record, Neil Steiniger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. And to provide a kind of more general answer to the question about staffing increases to state government, I'll direct your attention to Attachment 5, which is a detailed backup spreadsheet, actually shows you the permanent full-time, part-time, and non-perm positions associated with each item. So you can see which items we project to have a staffing increase in state government. So there are a total of 27 full-time positions and 5 non-perm that we would expect to bring on in fiscal year 23 to manage through some of these programs.
What's the title of that document?
It is Attachment 5, Detailed Backup Spreadsheet.
I would
take the brief at ease. House Finance back on the record, and we've located detailed Attachment 5. So are there further questions on this document? Mr. Steiniger, anything further?
If I could, Madam Chair, on so the DMVA item is line 23, so you see they aren't expecting to need more people for that particular program. They already administer grant grants that we receive from Homeland Security for FEMA grants, disaster assistance grants. So my understanding is they will just incorporate this new grant program into that.
Great, thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and through the Chair, I just had a quick question on the abandoned mine lands reclamation program. Would that be on state land, or would that be something that would be a actual private entity, or potentially an entity that was leasing state or federal land, I guess? Do you have any kind of information on? I'm just trying to get a sense on what kind of lands would be impacted by that potential.
Sure. The allocation is based, and maybe we can defer to the department, but I know the allocation is based on the tons of coal historically produced within a state, is historically and currently produced in the state, is how the national program is allocated. So it's $11 billion nationally. It's going to be a 15-year program, and so it's based on an estimate. And no state is supposed to get less than $20 million over the course of the program. So our percentage of that national coal production is low enough that we'll probably would just hit the $20 million total target. And so that's where the 1.3 is the $20 million divided by 15 years.
It looks like we have...
That's the estimate.
David LePain from Department of Natural Resources. Mr. LePain.
David LePain. I'm the director of the DNR Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. I'm not able to speak to this issue. I believe this is a Division of Mining, Land, and Water issue.
Okay. Justin, is Mr. Ivory's on the line?
We'll take a brief.
Hello. For the record, my name is Justin Ivory's. And I am the program manager for the Abandoned Mine Lands Program for DNR East Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Through the chair, representative, the money that you're asking questions on, $1.33 million annually, can be applied to any land status around the state. So it does not have to be state land. It can be federal, private, or other, as long as we have the cooperation and permission of the landowner.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll go ahead and be specific. I'm thinking of the Sutton area where there's been a significant amount of coal moved out of there, and there's probably overlapping land ownership in different places. But I would say, I guess I'd have to go look and see how the status of the abandoned land, of the mine, where it fits in the abandoned mine lands program, but it seems like it might fit.
Representative, that is correct. We have done a number of reclamation projects in the Sutton area over the life of the program, which dates back to the early 1980s, and there is still projects in our inventory that are in that area, and so the program will definitely be working in that area over the coming years.
Thank you very much for being with us. I see you on my list now. Ms. Representative Ortiz.
Follow up on the previous question. In relationship to the category of abandoned mine lands reclamation, what kind of, do we have an idea of the total, for lack of a better word, obligation that's out there? In other words, do we have a number of locations around the state where these mines have been, by definition, I guess, abandoned, and there needs to be reclamation and cleanup that happens in relationship to those? Is it a pretty significant problem that needs to be addressed?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, we have a significant inventory left, which we will be working on when the program was created in the early 80s and the Alaska Department of Natural Resources took primacy of the program from the feds, the first effort was to inventory all of the abandoned mines around the state, specifically coal mines, because that's where the funding historically came from. We have, at this time, about $45 million of reclamation projects still in our inventory. And to date, we've expended over $30 million completing reclamation projects since the early 80s. The majority of the outstanding inventory is located in the Healy Valley in the interior, but there's also a significant amount of inventory in the Sutton area as well. Those were the two historic coal production regions within Alaska, and so of course that's where most of our reclamation is still to be done.
Great, thank you very much. And I think we will have the gentleman finish the presentation, and then if there are time for specific questions, we can go over those, but just in the interest of time, we'll go through the slides and we can have them back again should we need to.
Okay, Madam Chair, just the last item there on DNR, I had mentioned the Community Wildfire Defense Grants program for a variety of uses for mitigation of wildfire around, particularly around urban, sort of the urban wildland interface, as they call it. DEC, I know that this committee has had some presentations and overviews of the substantial water and wastewater effort that we do currently, and this is a, there is a huge investment at the federal level in this, in these programs, and so we don't need to spend a lot of time on it. I would just note that you know, the expectation is that the Village Safe Water program that we think of, that we get, the state gets appropriated, didn't substantially increase that direct appropriation, but the Village Safe Water program that we run at the department is going to receive a tremendous amount of money through the Indian Health Services sanitation program, where Alaska is expected to get about $2 billion. And so DEC plays an important administrative management training implementation sort of role in that. And you'll see there was also new money in the areas of emerging contaminant and lead line service. So large capitalizations to those two funds. And then we're required in some cases to, in essence, spend a portion of that on subsidies. So in essence, they work more like grants than loans. And then on slide 11, this is the sort of the operating budget side of the impacts of those increases. So this is where on the spreadsheet that Director Steininger pointed out, you'll see the majority of the position increases related to this bill are in DEC.
Representative Carpenter. I just had a feeling.
Thank you. So high level, I'm going to keep us down the weeds at high level. What would be the thinking about why we would be putting these in as permanent full-time positions for temporary money? Temporary being measured until 27 and the expectancy of this federal money. And I would just compare that to the SPAR folks that are
I think the department, we've talked a lot about that, Representative Carpenter, through the chair internally. This has gotten a lot of review at our level, and so I think the departments could certainly give you a couple bullet points on what the thinking there is.
Okay. Okay, can we take a brief at ease? Finance back on the record. It looks like we have Carrie Bohan with DEC. Ms. Bohan, are you able to help Representative Carpenter with that question?
Yes, for the record, this is Carrie Bohan. I'm the Facilities Program Manager with the Department of Environmental Conservation. So for most of the positions that we're looking at, I think it's fair to start with, particularly with Village Safe Water, the majority of work that we do is already contracted out. And so that really isn't, the positions that we are talking about are primarily engineer positions responsible for overseeing project implementation, where we're doing that on the behalf of the community for Village Safe Water purposes, and things like construction and design are already contracted out. We also have a pretty predictable vision of projects through the funding process, so we can see when projects are moving up the list and likely to be funded, which of those will be administered by Village Safe Water on behalf of communities. And certainly we have the opportunity with those positions as attrition is happening naturally within the program, we can tie that attrition and the upcoming project schedules together. But I think that there's a lot of concern about the competitive nature of the engineering position with all of the funding that's going to be spread among different industries. The competition for those positions is incredibly high. And I think that's one concern we have about creating non-permanent positions where people have very little incentive to stay to help us see these projects through to fruition. And also, most of the projects that we're implementing are 5 to 10 year lifespan from initiation to completion. And so while there's allocation of funding for 5 years, these projects will take much longer to complete. And there's a risk of project slowdowns and cost increases if we are changing up those staffing throughout that process.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter?
I'm not sure the logic follows. If we've got a five-year program with somewhat known dollar figures coming in, it seems like you could put together a pretty good understanding of what your contract engineered positions or the engineered positions you're going to fill by contract for that 5 years, and not requiring a permanent full-time position. I mean, this slide here is 19 additional permanent full-time positions for a five-year window of increased federal government spending. It doesn't seem to me that that's very difficult to figure out how to turn that into a contract position that doesn't increase the long-term state personnel costs. And I don't hear an answer as to why the permanent full-time positions is better than going with a contract position. We need to have an offline conversation to understand this.
Mr. Baker?
Representative Carpenter, through the chair, we can provide you something. We'd be happy to provide you in writing something on that.
Great, thank you. Please continue. We will absolutely make sure it's distributed to the committee. Yes, thank you.
Madam Chairman, I'm on slide 12. As we said at the out front, half of this investment at the federal level is in transportation through, and it certainly holds true here at the state level. So we are at sort of the baseline spending for Alaska and transportation, it's about a 19%, you know, increase over the current year. So it's about $110 million over all programs. And then for this first bump up, and then it's expected to be about 2% above that then over the rest of the years. So that's in the surface transportation. But the AIP program, substantial increases there. And we, in both the surface transportation and the AIP, we have separate attachments with all the detail of the individual projects. So what we're just showing here is the federal money and the match. And then you see it over the 2 years. So in DOT's case, we're doing a supplemental for FY22, which is the budget year you approved last year. And then you see this substantial increase there in the current budget year. And then there are four new programs that I think folks have heard about in the DOT area, the Bridge Formula Program. And we're expecting to get about $45 million a year. And so you'll see for each of those, the total is for 2 years. So the first 2 years of each of those programs, the PROTECT program, carbon reduction program, and then the electric vehicle program, which will be a program done in conjunction between DOT and AEA. So those are Federal Highway Administration funds. But as I think as folks have heard, AEA has been working on electric vehicle infrastructure already in the state, and will probably be sort of taking the lead in terms of the strategy and stuff, but we'll need DOT to be there to certify the corridors and that sort of thing. We're now switching, I guess, going back to that top-level slide we had at the beginning. So we just ran through all of the sort of standard programs, if you will. And these are areas where we believe that some additional state support makes sense, state general fund support. And the first is cybersecurity, upgrade security monitoring. So I think these will enhance our ability to address some of the significant security issues we've had recently. I think we've had several in the past 12 months that have gotten quite a bit of attention. These are two, an area that just with the national focus we think is important. DEC, there is a lot of money for brownfield mitigation and a cleanup of legacy sort of pollution. And you saw earlier that there's federal funding coming in for that. Our ability as a state to really go after opportunities on state land and other areas, we need to improve our understanding in the database that we have tracking that. So, and then there's a small increment there for sort of the non-federally eligible water quality piece. Of the substantial water program. And then in natural resources, the critical minerals resource mapping, we want to make sure that as we implement that federal program, that we are able to properly map and assess our own mineral basins.
Great, thank you. And I think we'll finish slide 14 and then need to adjourn.
Okay. The next one, just quickly, is congressional earmarks. So there were two that needed additional authority. These Senator Murkowski, $2 million appropriation for AHFC's successful housing program for rural professionals, and the governor want to also match that with $2 million of GF. So there's a $2 million federal earmark and $2 million that we would like to focus on public safety housing in rural Alaska. And then there was an earmark for coastal and nearshore mapping for DNR as well.
Great, thank you. And I apologize that we are out of time, but we will have you back at a future meeting to hear the rest of the presentation and learn more.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. With that, we are going to conclude our business. Our next meeting will be Friday, April 8th at 1 p.m. And we will be taking up two bills that were pushed back this week, House Bill 170, Energy Independence Program and Fund, and House Bill 307, Extend Bond Authority for Interior Energy. So with that, at 1:56, we are adjourned. Thank you.